It's not over for Fenerbahce by any stretch of the imagination, taking that one goal lead back to Portugal. But we are ready. We are time, and we do have the man on the line right now. He's one of our favourite people to get on World Football Daily. He's a man who can tell us anything about anywhere in world football. And joining me now on the line is Mr. Andy Brassel, joining us here on Friday. And Andy, where do we start this weekend? There are big games all across the board. England, Italy, Spain, France. Where do you want to go? Or should we start in chronological order with last night, mate?
Well, for me, the big one this weekend, and I'm sure we'll come back to Europa League in a minute, the big one this weekend has to be Lyon versus St Etienne on Sunday. It's a massive derby in France, and I think the fact that, that they're battling it out for a Champions League spot, which I'm sure it won't have been lost on St Etienne fans that, that Lyon president Jean-Michel Aulas said a couple of years ago that the only way St Etienne are going to play Champions League is by getting a PlayStation. they'll be right on it. They'll be really up for this. And of course, they won their first title for over 25 years last weekend in winning the Coupe de la Ligue as well, which guarantees them Europa League football for next season. But Lyon have come back into nick over the last couple of weeks, so it's just going to be such an exciting face-off, I think. Then, you know, they're both playing really attractive football this season, and these derbies are often like quite a battle, but I'm a little hopeful that this will be a bit more of a footballing spectacle if we take the rivalry out of it.
What is this rivalry like in comparison to maybe, you know, you look at kind of a Barca against Real Madrid, you look at Arsenal, Manchester United, of course, taking place this weekend as well. How is this rivalry? How do you compare it?
Well, it's geographically informed for a start. They're next to each other. It's a real local derby. They're about 40 minutes apart. And of course, Lyon's rise to prominence is very much a 21st century thing. And where this kickoff between various presidents started was some years ago when the late former St Etienne chairman Roger Rocher, he said that when it comes to football, St Etienne will always be the centre of town and Lyon will always be out in the sticks, which is kind of like the opposite of how they are as towns. St Etienne's like a former coal mining town. There's not really much to it. Lyon's very bourgeois and plush. But of course, Lyon turned that round, winning all those titles in the first part of the 21st century while St Etienne were up and down. They had various problems with passport scandals, money scandals, and they're back in nick at the moment. And the fact that they're both up there is really good for that region. And like I said, they're both really, really good teams to watch, but it is a bitter, bitter rivalry, certainly for the fans. Because it's funny, I guess football's become more intense in this way. I sort of speak to members of my family, older members of my family, who say, you know, in the northeast, when they were younger, you could go and watch Newcastle one week and Sunderland the next, and that was normal. And you speak to older people around the Lyon area, and they say, you used to do that. You used to go and watch Lyon one week and St Etienne the next in the 80s and early 90s. But you know, you couldn't do that now at all. So that's partly a reflection of how football is nowadays, but also they're genuine rivals from this season, which is quite exciting.
And obviously, as you say, the Champions League spot very much at stake in this tie. We're looking at St Etienne. We've been talking a lot this season about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, but very little mention, really, Johan Molo, who's been playing on the other side of the pitch on that flank and has had almost as impressive a season aside from the goal tally.
Yeah, and he was really struggling. Nancy, he fell out badly with Jean Fernandez, who was the coach there at the time. But you're right, he's provided a total creative spark since he's arrived in January for Aubameyang. And Aubameyang needed that because basically, he had a really bad dip in form just before Christmas, and you know he looked fantastic when he's been on form this season, but he had a really bad dip. He didn't score for 2 months, and when he didn't score, St Etienne didn't score. And there's a feeling, it sort of goes back to the first derby between these two when Lyon were down to 10 men, but they won 1-0 with a free kick from Michel Bastos, who of course at Schalke now. And you know, there was just a feeling in the performance of that game that, you know, St Etienne, even though they won their first derby in 20 years last year, that when it comes to these really big matches, you know, they haven't really got the nuts to step up and grab the game. But they put that to bed a little bit with their performances against PSG this year. They won at the Parc des Princes, and they came back from 2-0 down at Geoffroy Guichard to draw the home game with them as well. So I think there's an appetite for them to show that they can deal with this really big occasion. And as you say, the attacking animation between Molo, Aubameyang and Brandao in the centre, who won his fourth League Cup last weekend, having won three with Marseille as well, that's something that could really make a difference.
Now, Saint-Étienne are riding this fantastic wave of form in Ligue 1, with unbeaten in the French league, French top flight, since the turn of the year. Lyon have just kind of got themselves back on track after those three straight losses a few weeks ago. Who's got the better form going into this one, Andy, and who's going to be coming out with the 3 points?
I think there's a sense that a draw might not be too bad from the Lyon end of it, because they know Saint-Étienne are in a really good nick. But I think a key to this could be in midfield for Lyon. I mean, Lyon have undoubtedly got the better players. That just goes without saying still. And I think the fact that Clément Grenier is in really terrific form at this point of the season, it's almost... You know, he's almost usurped Yohan Gourcuff in that central area. Gourcuff started out on the left last week when he made his return against Montpellier, and he's very good, and he probably will stay there for the derby against Saint-Étienne. But it was Grenier who really got the headlines by scoring the winner in the last minute with an absolutely terrific goal from range. And he's grown up so much since last season. He's got the confidence to pull the strings now, and he really is the future of Lyon. And I think, you know, you associate them with dominance, with a lot of money, with big purchases, but also they've always been able to bring through players absolute top quality, from Atem Ben Arfa, Karim Benzema, and now it's happening again with this 91 generation, this generation of players born in 1991, of which Grenier is heading, and also includes Alexandre Lacazette.
Elsewhere in France, Andy, you mentioned kind of big money spenders, and PSG, of course, the typical big money spenders, linked again with a number of names already around before we've even reached the end of the season. What's the future, though, for Ibrahimovic there? Because there's a lot of speculation about him joining Juventus, going back to Italy, or leaving in general. And apparently his agent, I noticed on your Twitter account today, said that a change of manager might help Ibrahimovic want to stay. Do you think he is going this summer?
I think there's a very good chance for him going if Ancelotti goes, because he's happy with Ancelotti being in charge. He's happy with the project as it is. But if Ancelotti moves on, that completely changes things for him. I think there's probably the slight feeling of the fact that he's already proved an immense amount in France, perhaps as much as he needs to prove, because at times he's looked like an adult playing with a load of small children. So good has he been, and so dominant has he been, and he's, you know, broken a 21-year-old goal scoring record already, and we're still in April in the French league. For me, the biggest problem with any prospective move to Juventus or anywhere else is his wages are absolutely humongous. And I don't really know of the clubs that would be interested, who would be willing and able to match those. Obviously, even if the tax does go up as planned to 75% on high earners in France, which is on the table at the moment, that's something that PSG can deal with. But I'm not convinced that Italian clubs really have that clout to go that little bit further, and, you know, whether they really want to for someone who's 31 as well, no matter how good he is.
Does it change at all with you know, the rumours that Cavani, is this £60 million transfer fee has been agreed? Does that help push Ibra out the door from his own personal point of view, not wanting to play kind of second fiddle to anybody?
Well, I think there are players who would be complimentary. I don't think there's any doubt about that. In terms of media exposure, I think you're very unlikely to get much higher than Ibrahimovic, not just because of the way he plays, but because of the way he presents himself. And I do think it would be a shame if he went from PSG, not just because it's a really good thing in terms of garnering interest for French football, but also he's someone who's developed another string to his bow while he's been there. He's realised that he's an experienced player, realised that something is expected of him in terms of leadership, and he's really risen to that challenge. Of course, he's picked up a couple of red cards, but nothing lunatic, really. It's just been collateral damage from the fact he gets stuck in. He's been a really, really good motivator for the team on and off the pitch, and he's been a really good example. And I know people think of him as an individualist, but he's not been like that at all. He's really helped the team, and he's really helped the club.
Now let's bounce down and away from France down to Spain, Andy, because it's the big game in Madrid this weekend. Atletico taking on Real Madrid. This is, of course, the Copa del Rey final as well that'll be taking place in the kind of the middle part of May. What's Madrid's attitude going into this, considering that they still feel that there is a possibility of salvaging this Champions League semi-final coming up in the week against Dortmund?
Well, I think they're likely to have sort of split emotions over it, Ollie, to be honest, because of course they've got this tremendous record over Atletico, having not lost to them for so many years. But, they want to give themselves the best possible chance. It's all been about the Decima, the 10th European Champions Trophy, ever since Mourinho arrived. And, it's not going to make a massive difference to how things end up, because, both teams should be pretty secure in automatic qualification for the Champions League next season. So it's a really tough one. I tend to think as well, what might work in Real Madrid's favour is the fact that Atletico always manage to psych themselves out in this. They just give a real pale performance no matter how well they're playing. They did that back at the Bernabeu in the first game. And this is the next big challenge for Simeone, who's done such an incredible job since he's been in charge at Atletico, to say to the players, look, maybe winning the game at Sevilla last week narrowly and a bit luckily as they did was really important in terms of cementing that place in the top three. But, there's a real opportunity here, because Real Madrid can't afford to go flat out. They really need to be at full throttle for that game, which is only on Tuesday, of course. It's not even on Wednesday. And, I think there's a little glimmer for Atletico here.
You mentioned that Atletico have a problem with kind of psyching themselves out of these derby games. Does the added pressure then of A, a potentially finishing above Madrid in La Liga, and B, securing the second spot of, and guaranteeing themselves automatic promotion to the Champions League, ending this terrible run as well against Real Madrid, does that just add more pressure and make it easier for them to psych themselves out this weekend as they've done before?
Well, I don't think they need reasons to do that, to be perfectly honest. But I'm sure that contributes in the same sort of direction. I think Simeone's shown the capacity to mix and match. And I think the fact that Diego Costa's inclusion, for example, I think that's a really good example. I mean, he's not really consistent with playing pretty football when he's the other side of Falcao, really, isn't he? Because Falcao is not only beautiful footballer to watch and 100% committed, but he's an angel as well, whereas Diego Costa is the absolute opposite. He's the devil. But I think to have that sort of player who could introduce that bit of niggle into the game, maybe get Madrid's more bookable players involved in a bit of nonsense, and I think we all know who I'm talking about there. I think that's an interesting gateway into maybe opening up an opportunity for Atletico.
Just going back then slightly, Andy, to talk about the reaction and the fallout that's still being kind of coming out here for Real Madrid after their performance against Dortmund, and Mourinho saying that he was expecting a lot more from these players and picking out individuals in that fact. Who do you think was the most disappointing performer on that pitch for Real Madrid? Mourinho's picked a kind of a selection of four or so in the Spanish press, apparently. But who do you think for you was that real letdown that might have been a big cause to that problem on Wednesday night?
The obvious one's Mesut Ozil. And I think he's been an oft-quoted statistic on Twitter since Wednesday's game. That he had no shots, no crosses didn't manage any dribbles, completed or otherwise. And, you know, I feel a little bit sorry for him because he's been on top of his game. I saw the game against Betis last weekend and he was brilliant. He was in really good rhythm. And, of course, because of Di Maria having to pull out, which is, you know, just one of those things, really. If Mourinho decided he wasn't up to it, then, you know, I think we have to take his word for it, because Mourinho really wanted Di Maria to play. There's no doubt about that. But bringing Modric in changed the shape and left Ozil out of the centre, sort of in the peripheral of things, and really messed about with Real Madrid's system. And of course, you know, they should be able to cope with whatever happens to them. They've got a good quality squad of really great quality players, and that they should be able to stomach a couple of absences. But I think those particular absences of Di Maria and of any right back, be it Arbeloa or Essien, so they had to break up the Ramos-Varane partnership and push Ramos out there to right back and bring Pep back in, who didn't really look at the races, having not played much in recent weeks, straight months. You know, it wasn't ideal for them. But I think Ozil is someone who you would expect to come back and step up in that second leg.
Just quickly then, before we let you go, Andy, the Europa League semi-finals kicked off as well last night, and Benfica losing to Fenerbahce in Turkey. You are a football connoisseur of all varieties, if you will. So with Fenerbahce and this great run that they've had in the Europa League this year, but losing Pierre Webbo for the second leg against Benfica, and Benfica an infinitely strong side in terms of their prowess in Portuguese football and a great European pedigree as well. How do you see the balance tilting slightly by that yellow card picked up by Webbo so needlessly?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a choker, isn't it? And it's going to make it tough because they defended really well back to front, and Webbo was a big part of that. He's someone who covers a lot of ground. He presses defenders really hard, and it clearly had an effect, especially with Luis Al being out, who was a big absence for Benfica, especially as Jardel played quite poorly. And it was something that told, particularly in the first half, I thought. So that is not great. But Fenerbahce's work rate was great. That's something they can take with them. The fact that they've got the lead is the most important thing. I saw Moussa Sow speaking on French television afterwards, and he was saying, look, you know, they're a really great team. And the fact that we're going to Lisbon with a lead at all is an exceptional result for us. But I do think they'll regret not scoring that second goal, because Benfica at home have so many players who can score goals. The atmosphere will be extraordinary. And, you know, they've just got that little bit of wind behind them at home, and, you know, not many people get one over them there.
It's going to be a very enticing second leg in the Estadio de Lutz, or the original Emirates Stadium, as some people would call it. Chelsea managed to get the 2-1 win in Switzerland against Basel last night, and it was a spirited fight at the end by Basel, but Chelsea, just the quality just kind of shone through last night, which we haven't seen too often in the Europa League. It's been a bit of a battle for Chelsea. Chelsea with the two goals, though, do you see them with a foot already in the final?
Yeah, I think so, Ollie. But what I was impressed by with Chelsea last night, you talked about the quality. For me, it was the desire to win the tie, and showed that they really wanted to go on and win this Europa League. The fact that they conceded an equaliser quite late on, and then just went and knocked on the door straight away, because they were determined to put this tie away and not leave anything to chance at Stamford Bridge. You know, they had a couple of good efforts before David Luiz scored that winner right at the end. So I think that's really important when you consider, you know, how some people have mocked the status of the Europa League a little bit. And, you know, Manchester City and Manchester United both going out pretty quickly in situations where we wouldn't expect them to go out after coming over from the Champions League in the last campaign. So I think that's a real credit to them. The only doubt I have is the fact that they've put in a couple of pretty wan performances in the Europa League at home. I think particularly against Sparta Prague, they weren't especially convincing against Steaua Bucharest either. So that's something that they're going to have to make sure they don't fall into. But they're strong favourites. There's no doubt about that.
Just quickly, you mentioned the kind of prowess of the Europa League and how it's kind of almost been mocked by City and United when they fell out into it and not treated seriously by the English clubs. So we're only seeing Chelsea kind of having this drive, though, in the semi-finals. I mean, it's not like you can say, as you pointed out there, that they seem to have cared so much about it in the earlier rounds, but now it's the business end, you know, two games away from a final and a bit of silverware, and suddenly it seems to mean a lot more.
Yeah, but unfortunately that's the way football is nowadays. You know, silverware is not the be-all and end-all. Champions League qualification is the be-all and end-all, and Chelsea haven't been able to completely rely on that. You know, that for them is still the most important thing, and I think we'll continue to inform Rafael Benitez team selections going up to the second leg of the final, second leg of the semi-final and to the final, if we assume they get there, because you know that's just the way it is, and the financial gulf is massive. Hopefully it will close up at some point, and you know, the Europa League is still a pretty young format that can grow and evolve, but you know there's an undeniable gap at the moment, and I think the fact that Chelsea did have that massive mid-season wobble means they haven't got any option but to sort of rotate their team.
And it is unfortunately a bit of a sour note to leave you on there, Andy. The depressing nature of football driven by money. But thank you so much for joining us here on World Football Daily, mate. It's been a long time since we last had you on, and we always enjoy getting you on and bouncing around the European leagues with you.
Real pleasure. Speak to you soon, mate.
Thanks so much, Andy Brassel. There joining us here on World Football Daily.